Digital Network.
And now, Tim Dillon is going to hell!
It's like we have a lot of those same interests, so it kind of, it was funny, but it also was like we could talk about, you know, some shit. Because I was nervous when I went in. I was like, I don't know.
For real?
Like, well, it was a little, well, because you go live immediately.
It was, dude, it was fucking awesome.
Yeah, it was so great. It worked out really great. It couldn't have went better, but it's like, I mean, you go live immediately and you're in front of 50,000 people. So you're like, it's, you know, it's, to me, it was like, it was like, you know, when you tape a special or something, you know what jokes you're going to, you know, with that thing, you're just raw. You're like, you're in.
Yeah.
You're in and you're like, but it worked out. Thank God.
Fuck yeah.
You know? How was the tour?
It's been fucking insane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It's been the best thing I've ever done in my life.
Yeah. Are we on? Are we good? Oh, great. Okay, good.
It's been the best. You know what? I went back into therapy yesterday for the first time in like 5 months.
Yeah.
But my therapist was like, is this because of the tour? I was like, no, not at all. It's other shit that it's like, you know, if you're not in therapy, it's stuff builds up sometimes. I shifted my perspective when I started the tour. Cause I was like, cause I looked at it. Segura called me and was like, you're going to die. You're going to die on the fucking road. Joey Diaz told my dad, we're putting money on whether or not Bert dies on the road.
Wow.
Because
is that Bet DSI? This would be a great time to get into an ad. You know, you could bet on anything. MMA fights, you know, whether Bert's going to die on the road or at home. There's so many options. That's crazy to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you know what? I think people think who I am on stage with my shirt off, and here's the problem is who I am on stage is who I am in real life, but not 100% of the day.
Of course, no one could be.
Yeah, and so like I'm also a very regular person who like tries to eat healthy, but people, when you hear that, I think people go, oh, shut the fuck up.
Right.
And like when you go like, yeah, I don't drink every single night. And they're like, okay, sure. But when I do drink, I drink. I'd like to drink.
Yeah.
And I do drink a lot. I probably drink more than the average person. I went for a hike today. I've been going to hot spin class. There are parts of my personality that I think don't fit into the branding of me. And so I think my style of comedian, the person that I am, that genre that I do, that I think I fall into, people assume that's also the Sam Kinisons and the Richard Pryors and the Mitch Hedbergs and the Ron Whites and the Ralphie Mays and the, you know, so.
Yeah.
And Ralphie's biggest problem was his tour bus. And so I think people just assumed.
Why was that his biggest problem?
Because it's just not healthy. I tried to figure it out the first like week I was on the tour bus. I went, so what's the thing that was Ralphie's problem? Because he would get on the tour bus and then just. I mean, I'm speaking out of my ass. I wasn't on the tour bus with him, but eat pills, smoke weed, sleep, not exercise, not be healthy, eat like shit, and just get bigger and bigger on the tour bus.
Right.
And man, when I got on that tour bus, I was like, oh, I see. Yeah. I know the trigger muscle where you go, hey, who wants to drink? Who wants to get high?
Yeah.
Who wants to do this? Let's stay up all night. Fuck it. Let's take a nap, start drinking again. I know that. Who wants to get McDonald's? Right. So I just naturally just.
Because it's like we're on a fucking bus.
Dude, it's a party. It's a fucking traveling party.
Yeah, right.
It's the fucking best.
Yeah.
But I changed my perspective when I started that night. A bunch of people telling me, you know, this is going to kill you. And I just said to myself, because you know when you get on the road and you go like, you do Thursday night's always fun because I can go drink after the show, one show. It's like a baseball game.
Yeah.
Or it's like a football game. And then Friday's a doubleheader, and you're like, oh, fuck.
You got to keep it together for two shows.
That early show, I'm like, motherfucker, I got a whole weekend ahead of me. I don't leave until Monday morning. It's Friday.
Right. Yeah.
And then the late show Friday, you're like, I'm almost halfway done.
Yeah.
And it's part of the reason I started taking my shirt off on stage was that mentality of like, I got to make this fun for me. I got to make this silly for me.
Right.
So when I looked at the scheduling, and the scheduling was like two shows Wednesday, two shows Thursday, two shows Friday, two shows Saturday, two shows Sunday, I started getting overwhelmed at the very beginning. And then I changed my perspective. I said, I've worked my entire, I said this out loud to myself, I've worked my entire career to get to this place. I never thought I'd sell a theater ticket. I never thought I'd ever perform in a theater, let alone would I sell out the tour in pre-sale and add seconds, thirds, and fourth and fifth shows in some markets. This is all the best. If you had told me a million years ago 20 years ago that I'd be doing this, I would say, fuck yeah, man. I said, I would get to say, I do stand up every night twice. Twice I get to do sets?
Yeah.
And I went, oh, I got to go back to that place in my head.
Right.
And so I said, all right, I'm going back to, this is what I do for a living, man. This is awesome. I'm doing stand up twice a night. So I never looked at, the weekend. I never looked at like where I was in the weekend. I just looked at the moment and going like, I get to work on my set right now. I get to do it twice tonight. If I fuck something up in the first show, I get to fix it in the late show. And then I'll work on it on the bus. And then I also said, I'm not going to go off the rails with eating. I'm not going to go off the rails with drinking. Although I have a couple days I did. But I go, I'm gonna try to be as regimented as possible and just add little things that I like. Like, I like saunaing. So I got like a membership to the YMCA. And I like getting on a treadmill. Even if I don't run, I walk.
Who's on the bus with you?
So I got my assistant, Cobra, a bus driver, Dean. We had a second bus driver, Travis.
I love Cobra is the name of somebody who keeps you in line.
I was just telling Leanne, if you don't, I think it makes life so much more interesting when you have a nickname.
Yeah.
When you, Tony Woods used to do that to everyone.
He'd give everyone a nickname.
Oh yeah. Maybe my buddy, Tony Hernandez, who runs Jax Media.
Yeah.
The first time he met him, he goes, I can't call another man Tony.
Yeah.
I got to have something on it. I can't just say, hey, Tony, because I don't think, you know, I'm talking to myself.
Somebody call him.
Eyebrows. Tony Eyebrows. You got good eyebrows. Tony Eyebrows.
Boom.
Yeah. So
it's Cobra, Leanne.
And then Leanne was on the first run, which was awesome, dude.
Yeah.
It was so awesome. And then I had Jesus Trejo on that first run. Shane Torres on the second run.
Awesome.
Dusty Slay on the third run.
Yeah.
Dave Williamson on the fourth run, fifth run, Dusty Slay again, and then it's Jesus. It goes Shane Torres, Jesus, and Dave one more
time. That's great.
So it's the best. It's the best. It's
this
so
is
much
your first tour
fun.
Of exclusively theaters.
Exclusively theaters.
Yeah.
And I had said it, I had no insight for what my year would look like. So I was like, I'll do this tour, and that's it. And then I'm going to take like 3 months off, and then I'll figure out what I'm going to do. If I go back to clubs, right, do more theaters, I don't know, we'll see. And now it's like, now I think I'm going to tour the entire year. I'm going to just do the entire year.
You're just like, fuck it. I want to go back out, tour for the whole year.
I want to tour the entire fucking year.
Is there anything else you want to, like, is there a TV show? Is there a movie?
No, fuck it all. No.
Who cares?
I love stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I fucking like.
Yeah.
And dude, and I got offered to do a acting part on something, and I just was like, I get depressed when I sit on set.
Yeah.
I literally, if I'm sitting in a trailer, I actually get depressed where I go, if I'm not creating the project or writing the project or in charge of the project and I'm just sitting waiting, I get, dude, it's a trigger thing in me. I get antsy and I get pissy and I get depressed. I go, I'm wasting my fucking life. And then when a person goes, actually, when like someone like a PA goes, we don't need you yet. I go, you don't talk to me like that. Like I did a project and I wanted to watch. Just wanted to watch. I'm like, actually, we have a lot of people on set. Someone that wasn't allowed to say that to me. We have a lot of people on set. I'm gonna need you to stay in your dresser and your trailer. And I got irate. I was like fucking losing my mind. I was like, I just want to sit and watch and learn. That's all this business is about. Is about learning and doing. Just doing shit and getting it done. Being creative and making shit. And you're gonna make me sit in a trailer? What do I do in a trailer? There's some people that their lives, that's what they want. They want to be sitting in a trailer, pampered. That's their thing. They got into this business. They got into stand comedy, so that maybe they can get on a sitcom and be like the third lead.
Well, we talked about. I mean, Rogan talked about. It's like that guy Jussie Smollett. How different is he from a lot of those actors out there?
He's identical to him.
Right.
He's identical. I mean, right. Dude, I remember getting a blowjob from an actress one time.
Yeah.
And I thought this is what it's fucking like. I was 27 years old. This is the dream. I had seen her on TV. I'd been like, I remember seeing her on TV and being like, I can't imagine the guy who gets to fuck her. I can't imagine. Meet her at a Dodgers game. We go back to her place in Santa Monica. We get naked. She goes to start blowing me, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm that guy. I'm like literally that guy. This girl's perfect. And as she has my dick in her hand and is about to put it in her mouth, she pops up and she goes, how can you have a deal at FX and at Fox at the same time? Like, is your production deal with CBS, or is it a network deal? Is it an overall deal? Is it a whole deal? And I was like, she's only got my dick in her hand so she can get information. Ever since then was like, all those bitches are broken.
Yeah.
Every dude, what kind of person? Look, this is, by the way, pretend I'm thinking these thoughts in my head, and I apologize that I'm saying out loud. And if you're an actor and you love acting, and I just don't understand what it is, I'm sure you could do the same thing about comics.
They would hear this. This is how nuts they are. They would hear it and love it because that's true sociopathy. You can make a lot of great points, and you'll be like, you're a soulless, vapid demon. And they'd be like, you know what? There's a great argument for that. Like, they don't care. It's amazing. They're unaffected by anything that we say.
I look at an actor, like a straight up actor, right? An actor. Not an actor who produces or an actor who directs or an actor who writes and creates his own projects. Not Amy Poehler, not Tina Fey. I'm not talking about just to act, Jesse Smollett.
Right.
Whose dream in life is it to just say other people's words?
Yeah.
That's like a guy who likes tracing.
Right. Right.
I'm not an artist. I just trace.
Just reproducing other works of art.
Dude, yeah. Yeah. You seen some Monet shit?
Yeah.
Do I trace that shit? Bad as fuck.
Well, there's also a difference, I think, between actors that are like in theater and doing live shows.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and please put that in there.
And people that are on camera and on film. Because there's something about cut again.
Yeah.
You do something 30 or 40 times that is much different to me than just being in theater. And also the rewards for being a theater actor are much different. There's far fewer spots for the top people in that, you know?
Yeah.
But it is wild being out here because there are so many people that are just looking for fame and money. They're, you know?
Dude, it's the same as, I mean, not shitting on Instagram models, and I'm very heavily active on Instagram, and I'm sure I'm guilty of what I'm about to say.
Yeah.
But like, those accounts where it's just pictures, there's just selfies?
Yeah.
And you're like, all you do is selfies?
Yeah.
Like, that's... Oh.
You're a guy that built a lot. You built a huge social media following. You used Instagram story. Is it ever exhausting? Because you treated it like an actual fucking show where you would basically be like, I'm taking you through my day.
I have to take breaks. I have to take breaks because...
I've heard comics say, Bert does an amazing fucking job with Instagram, but they're like, I could just never do that because I don't have it in me.
It's part of me. It's in me. So like I got really interested in vlogging maybe 4 years ago, 3 years ago. And I started a vlog. I don't know how many episodes I did. Maybe like, I'm going to guess 60 episodes.
Right.
And I was really obsessed with it. I thought I got into the editing and the music and making the product was really fun for me. Cause I'd been at Travel Channel. I'd just been a hired gun of like hosting for the first, you know. And then I got into not directing, but producing the episodes and kind of directing them in the field on the fly. And I got into cameras and I got into editing. And then I was like, I want to do a vlog. So I did a vlog, maybe 50 episodes. And from that, I then got fired from Travel Channel. And
why?
Because the new president didn't like me.
Gotcha.
She just wanted her own people in there. And then she drove it into the ground. No offense to that lady, but
that's
the reason Discovery bought it.
Yeah.
And I think the direction was pretty weak after me. That's just my bitterness. I was really hurt. That's when I started therapy. I was really hurt. It fucking was the lowest I've ever been in my life when I got fired from Travel Channel.
And it was Birth the Conqueror, and you did that show for how long?
I did Birth Conqueror, then Trip Flip for 4 years.
Right.
And then Birth Conqueror again. But I was like I was a utility player, and it was like a family, and it was fun. There was like I remember.
And
being,
you started, how long had you been doing stand-up when you got that job?
I started probably 11 years.
Okay, so you were doing stand-up about 11 years, and then you got that job.
And then I got that job. I was headlining. I was making like $2,000 on the road a week.
Yeah. I know what that's like.
Yeah. And so then you get a job and they're paying $10,000 a week and you're like, fuck yeah. And then they give you an overall deal for like $250,000 for 2 years. And you're like, oh, that's fucking legit. I'll get that money. For every year I'll get that money. And you're like, oh, I'm in.
Changes your life.
I was sitting here when they gave me the call to give me, shout out to Andy Singer, when they gave me the deal for Travel Channel for 2 years. And I lit a joint and opened a bottle of champagne. And I said, brought my wife and I said, sit down. We don't have to worry about money for 2 years. I know that that feeling is fucking surreal.
Yeah.
And then I went from that to a 3-year contract I just kept putting contracts to Travel Channel, the more money. And it was just so great. I thought that was what I was going to do. And then I get fired. And then.
How did you find out you got fired?
I was taking a walk trying to lose weight. Because Tom and I were in this fat shaming thing.
Yeah.
And
so that's been going on for decades, literally.
That's been going on for fucking
this
ever.
Is a, yeah, this is a fucking wild.
Oh, and so I was taking a walk. And then I was going to get a vasectomy. And they were doing demolition on our house.
You're going to get a vasectomy.
I was taking a walk knowing I had a vasectomy at 4 o'clock.
Interesting.
And my wife had scheduled a vasectomy. I had agreed to it. They were doing demolition on our house. They were tearing down our house. And I had a Funny or Die tour I was going to do on the Oddball tour, like 12 dates.
Okay.
I get a phone call from Travel Channel, and they say that she just says we're choosing to go a different direction and not work with you anymore. And I was the worst, man. It was like getting broken up with. I was in love and I didn't want to get broken up with. And it was,
what year was this?
This is 3 years ago, probably exactly 3 years. Okay. A little over 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And then I called my wife and I told her I'm not getting a vasectomy. And I get another phone call saying that the Funny or Die dates that I had been booked on, that I'd already booked travel for, which was not included in my deal. I had to book my own travel and my own hotel. I'd already booked all that. They canceled all the dates and they weren't refunding me my money. And so I was out now like 12 grand for all these fucking travel dates. And then I'm just lost. And I canceled all my tour from like, whatchamacallit, to December. Like August to December, because I was going to do this Funny or Die tour. I wasn't, my Showtime special is coming out in November. We're in demo in my house. No one fucking watches it. I'm at the lowest I've ever been in my fucking life, and I started therapy. And I was like, fuck this. I don't know how I got into this conversation. I don't know what I was talking about, but.
No, we were just talking about Travel Channel, and you were talking about how that was the thing that got you into vlogging.
Oh, yeah. So the only reprise I guess I had was, yeah. I was in Philadelphia and I was lost and I just decided to, I saw this guy Mr. Ben Brown online and he had a vlog and it was cool and his life looked happy and it looked right. Like a cool life. I was like, I want that guy's life.
How important do you think it is in this business, and I'm sure it's in other businesses too, to get lost, to be at the lowest point, to lose everything you fucking have and to have to sit there and go, fuck, what now?
I heard Ted Danson say that probably 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And I went, that guy's out of his fucking mind. It is so fucking important.
Well, yeah.
Look at, dude, number one example, Joe Rogan.
Right.
Joe Rogan, for those of you who don't know, and this is, it's just not commonly shared knowledge, or right. If it is, it's been lost in where he is today.
Right.
Called out Carlos Mencia, top of his game, Fear Factor, touring, Comedy Store regular, calls out Carlos Mencia. The next day, Comedy Store bans him. He loses his agency. He's not on Fear Factor, and he's just up in the hills going like, my home's been taken away from me. Fuck it. What do I do? Red Band, what do you want to do? Red Band's like, we should start a podcast. And he starts Joe Rogan Experience at a place of just going like, this is fun.
Yeah.
I'm doing something for me. I'm creating my own content.
Mark Maron, what the fuck?
Dude, Mark Maron.
Same thing.
Dude.
Yeah.
Across the board, it's this commonality that I think you have to have at some point is like a real bottom where you go like, what does Burt want to do? I remember sitting with Bill Burr. Bill Burr did what, like 3 specials on Comedy Central. And I remember sitting with him and he's like at the improv. And he was like, is this it? We just do specials that no one fucking watches.
Right.
What the fuck, man? And then all of a sudden Netflix happens and turns his career around. And for me, that bottom was watching these vlogs and seeing these things going, I can make that. I think I could edit that and shoot that.
Yeah, because it takes you back to what gets a lot of people in a stand-up is whatever they're doing in their life either isn't working or it's not making them happy.
Yeah.
So when I started stand-up, I was in the mortgage industry and that crashed. I owned a house. It was being foreclosed. Like everything in my life, I was at a bottom and I was like, I want to do something that I enjoy that's exciting.
Yup.
And stand-up comedy was that thing.
I want to be excited. That was the number one thing.
Yeah.
I was so non-excited by travel. But in my existence, Travel Channel was fun. It was a blast.
Yeah.
A lot of great memories. I loved it. It was a great time of my life. But I was not excited by the product anymore. And I wasn't excited with stand-up either.
Right.
I was just lost. And so starting that vlog excited me. I walked around with a camera everywhere. I looked for shots. I set up pretty shots, time lapses. I mean, I look back at that vlog now, and it reminds me of such a happy time in my life, and I was at the lowest I've ever been.
Yeah.
The lowest I've ever been. But here's the problem with that, is I got lost in the vlog. I mean, I remember my birthday. I was too busy setting up shops to celebrate my birthday. Like, I'm sitting here going, I need a time lapse. I need a GoPro over here.
Oh, yeah.
Isla, hold this camera. George, Leanne, get the owl over here. And so at some point, I've realized it was cannibalizing my life. And at that time, Snapchat showed up.
Yeah.
And I heard an interview with Casey Neistat where he said, Snapchat's the future. It's going to replace vlogging because now you can just tell your story on Snapchat. And I went, that is such an easier way to do it. Because in vlogging, you had to get all the shots and then edit them, put music to them, tell your story that way. So I looked at, I couldn't connect with Snapchat because everyone was so young. What I found interesting wasn't what was going.
Yeah, everybody on Snapchat is 15.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't me. As soon as Instagram came out, I was like, really quickly, I was like,
this is it.
I know how to edit stories. I can just tell a story. And so
you were doing story, but kind of earlier than a lot of people.
I was into it. And I remember all my friends were like, dude, that's so, what are you, fucking 13? Tommy said that to me. What are you, 13?
Yeah.
And then I said to Tom, you know what's cool, man? They have this swipe up feature. So when you mention a tour date, people can swipe up and actually go straight to buy tickets. And he was like, huh?
Right.
I was like, oh, yeah, yeah. And I reached out to everyone. I remember Ari calling me going, hey, man, how do I get that swipe up thing?
Yeah.
And then I was like, it's a really effective tool.
Yeah.
To just simply, it's not about getting fans. It's about getting the people that like you to go see you do stand up. That was all it was for me. And so, and then I, when that happened, I looked at Instagram as like, have fun, put out silly shit, I enjoyed setting up a camera, making a promo video, and making a funny promo video. I enjoyed all of that shit. I loved it.
When did you start selling tickets? Like, when did you go from a guy that would draw a few people at a club who would say, hey, we loved you, to a guy where you're showing up now and now 70, 80% of the room more is there exclusively for you?
It happened overnight.
Yeah.
It happened overnight. That's what I love about this business. Dane Cook, a long time ago, I was at his house for 2 days in a row. We were just going back and forth, hanging out. We were playing guitars and going to see a movie and having dinner. Like, spent the whole day with him. One day, he was so depressed. He was so, so depressed. And he's like, I don't know. What the fuck's the point, Bert? What's the point of this business? What's the fucking point? MySpace hadn't taken off for him yet. The next day, I showed up at his house and he goes, dude, I booked a movie. I was like, what?
Wow.
He goes, that's what I love about this business. It's like a lottery ticket.
Yeah.
He was like, I'm in a great mood. Let's go see Star Wars. And I was like, huh?
What an unhealthy way to live.
That would be great.
God, what a nightmare. I mean,
right?
It's the way we live, but it's like, what a crazy, like in my grandfather's life, there was no day he went home and he's like, honey, booked a movie.
Yeah.
It was just like the same job. Maybe, you know, my grandfather was a smart guy and he was a general contractor, but it was like you got a little better, a little better,
a little smarter,
yeah, yeah, a little smarter. You saved a little bit more money. You learned the system a little more. And at the end of your life, you had all this shit to show for it. Whereas with us, it really is like book the movie, book to this.
But here's the other thing that
my friend's a commercial actor. He gets really close to the big national campaign and they go, well, we love you. But, you know, it could just be that the CEO's wife doesn't like your mustache.
Yeah.
And he's like, then he comes back because he's had two callbacks and they love him. And then he comes back. He's like, well, you know. But then one day he's Flo from Progressive or whatever.
But here's the flip side of that. And this is the part I would argue is that, like, you also get the opportunity. And this was my situation. You get the opportunity. Imagine if you just built houses all fucking day. Just that's all you did, like general contract, build houses, but they're in like a weird fucking neighborhood and no one really saw them. And then one day someone was like, hey man, can you build me a house here? And you're like, oh, that's all I've been doing. That's my specialty.
You're ready.
And that's the thing with stand up is like, I did stand up for probably, I'm guessing 17 years. And I would argue I was funnier then at 17 years than I am today, but like only because you had just wealth of material. No one was doing specials the way we're doing them today.
Yeah.
You could literally just, I could throw out a subject and I had 10 minutes on that subject from this wealth of shit, which now it's not set up like that. You can't really go back into your bag. You kind of, everything's got to be new. So Showtime special comes out. No one sees it. December 27th, 28th, I post.
2015? 16.
I post the machine story on Facebook. I was that weekend at the Oxnard Levity Live. 25 grand was my guarantee for New Year's Eve. And they maybe sold 150 tickets, 200 tickets tops for the whole fucking weekend.
Right.
They lost their ass.
Right.
In my head, I'm like, someone's getting fired for this. Like, yeah. They lost way too much money. I felt bad. I felt guilty. Yeah. I called my manager and I said, we should give them some money back. I don't want someone to lose their job over me. And she's like, listen, they made it in food and beverage. It's a break even for them. But I know what you're saying. Like, listen, we may need to renegotiate some of your deals moving forward this year. If tickets are going to be that slow, but well, let's see. All my guarantees, I had a guarantee for everything. Across the board, it was 10 grand. 3 years ago, my guarantee was 10 grand and $500 bonuses. If I sold or paid in any show. Sold or paid, I got $500 bonuses on all shows. 5 shows a week. 6 shows a week. The next date I had was January 10th, and it was in the Stress Factory, and there was a blizzard in town, 2016. It showed up that weekend, and Vinny Brand was like, I'm going to lose my ass. And I sold out every single show. The Machine Story went viral, and I sold out every single show. And I didn't realize what had happened. I just was like, I remember Florentine was in the back, and I was, and he was like, dude, great fucking turnout. And I was like, oh, it's probably all comps.
So you weren't even making the connection.
I didn't know. Yeah. I didn't know what happened. And he was like, great turnout. And I was like, oh, it's probably all comped. And he was like, no, Vinny said it's all paid. And I went, Vinny's saying that because you're asking about me. He's not going to lie. He's not going to throw me under the bus. And he was like, no, I'm being serious. And so I went up on stage. Tom and I had done the weight loss challenge, but I went up on stage. I said, how many people are here from Joe Rogan's podcast? And a good group applauded. And then I said, okay, why are the rest of you here? And some woman goes, Facebook, the machine. I had said to myself I was going to retire that story. I was like, I'd already told on my special, I'm going to retire it. And I said, oh, I'm not telling that story. And she went, oh, you better tell that story. That's the only reason any of us are here. And then the room started going crazy. That viral video of the machine was a game changer. The next weekend I was in Buffalo. And Vinny came up to me and gave me like $2,000 extra. I didn't have bonuses in my contract with Vinny. Yeah. It was a straight buyout. Gave me $2,000 extra. And he's like, I had a great weekend. Because of that $2,000, I started the waitstaff raffle. Because I had an extra money to give to the waitstaff. But I felt like if I gave it to one person.
Yeah, it's fucked up.
It's fucked up. So I was like, I'll just raffle it off to them. Yeah. And then I had everyone collect money. And we raffled it off. And it was a good story. So the next week I'm in Buffalo. Same blizzards in town, right? Same snow. And I sell out every show again.
And this is 17 years in or more.
This is 17 years in.
17 years in, overnight.
Over
fucking night.
A 17-year-old overnight sensation.
And how long have you been doing that story?
The machine?
Years.
I mean, I don't know. Halston, can you look it up and see when I did it on Joe Rogan's podcast?
Because it's amazing. It's like
2009, I'm guessing.
It's just so Facebook allows it to just go viral.
Viral. Like, yeah. Was
it on a special?
It was on my special. No one watched the special.
On a special, nobody watched the special.
Nobody watched the special.
But it's that fucking, that moment that it goes viral on Facebook changes everything.
Game changer.
Yeah.
And now just like anyone else that has a viral video, people pay attention, find out you're there. They come to see you. But here I am with an ability to do stand-up comedy.
Absolutely.
And people are like, whoa, I'm coming up to me at the end. You're fucking funny.
Yeah.
Dude, your stories about your daughter are fucking hilarious. Like, holy shit, man, you fought a bear? Like, what? Who the fuck are you?
Right.
Because all of a sudden I had this one story that was great, but I had like fucking 20 stories that were just as good because I was a comic. I knew how to tell a story and I knew how to tell a joke and I knew how to interact with the audience. If a heckler popped up, I could diffuse it.
Yeah.
And not in a mean way because I'm not that guy, but I also drank and I also knew Joe Rogan. I also knew Tom Segura. And people were like, oh, wait, you're the Travel Channel guy from Rogan? And I was like, yes. So
everybody was just kind of introduced to you, but you had been spent years building a fucking act and you're
an interesting
person.
Cardi B. Yeah. It's like right. Cardi B. Right. How many of us heard Cardi B's name and never heard one of her songs?
Right.
And then one day you're in the car and you're like, who is this?
Yeah.
And your daughter goes, oh, it's Cardi B. And I was like, she's actually pretty fucking good.
Couldn't you imagine, let's say that never happened. Could you imagine still being in this business?
Yes.
Okay, you know where I'm going? You're still...
Dude, those sliding doors
fucked
my head.
You're still in
this
business. You're at let's say, a Zany's or whatever, Funny Bone, an improv, and you're selling 30 or 40... I love your breathing right now. Could you imagine you're on the road and you're still... you know, you've been in it... Because there are dudes, Bert, that are there. And... It gets dark.
Dude, I call this... By the way, everything I'm saying, Halston's heard me say probably a million fucking times.
Right.
I call it survivor's remorse.
Yeah.
I have survivor's remorse.
Right.
So during that month that was like, during that time period in 2016, which was my lowest I've ever been.
Yeah.
I was at, this is how things were happening for me. I was at Helium St. Louis and I was like, you know, probably $10,000 guarantee.
Right.
I flew in early to do a podcast with Doug Benson on a Wednesday night. And I got into a fight with Doug Benson on stage that melted down, spiraled out, and was a live podcast.
Yeah, that's a kind of infamous thing.
And
What was the fight about?
I bought 200 cheeseburgers to give to the fans.
Yes, this is a famous thing.
And Doug did not think the 200 cheeseburgers was a funny idea, and I wasn't listening. I wasn't listening to anyone at the time, and I decided 200 cheeseburgers is where this show's going.
White Castle McDonald's?
Burger King.
Burger King. Okay.
I called Burger King when I landed on the plane, on the tarmac.
Yeah.
I called Burger King with this brilliant idea.
Yeah.
I said, I'm going to order 200 cheeseburgers from you. I'm going to pick them up and pay for them. I need them ready ASAP. You're right by the club.
Right.
I'm heading to the club. The show starts at 8. I will be there at 7:30. It is now 7 o'clock. And the guy goes, I can't just make 200 cheeseburgers. I go, my name is Bert Kreischer. Google me. I will be there in 30 minutes.
Okay.
When I walked in, they go, it's the guy.
Yeah.
They had him ready. I grabbed him. I showed up. Doug said, please don't bring him on stage. And he went on stage. And
Now, why does he not want them on stage?
Very soundly, he didn't want 200 people eating cheeseburgers during the show.
In hindsight, perfectly reasonable argument.
Who the fuck wants everyone eating while you're doing a show? Not just some people eating. Just everyone. Everyone gets a cheeseburger.
The whole room, just rappers and people just.
These are pretty good. Thank you.
Yeah, the gnashing of teeth.
So
God.
He goes on stage. I look at everyone in the room and I go, oh, you can suck a dick. I'm bringing those cheeseburgers out there. I bring them out and Doug said, I asked you not to do that. And I went, I thought you were joking. And he goes, no, I was very clear.
Yeah.
And he walks them off stage and puts them back in the green room.
Now the audience is pissed.
Now the audience is like, we were just about to get cheeseburgers. Oh.
You've tanked the whole thing.
By the way, I'm drunk and shirtless.
Right.
And so everyone's like, the fucking Santa Claus just brought cheeseburgers.
Right, right.
So he puts them back in the thing. And then one of the people that works there walks them back out on stage and puts them on stage.
Oh, my.
And Doug's fucking irate now.
Yeah.
And he goes, you know what? Fuck it. Fuck it. And by the way, rightfully so, I am not listening. I'm not a great listener.
Right.
And so I think this is a bit. I can't really tell what's going on. I am drunk. He then takes the cheeseburgers off and hides them and comes back. Someone then in the staff gets where he hid them and brings them back to the green room. I go to the green room and bring them back on stage, and that's when the legit meltdown happened. And he screamed at me. I realized he was being serious. We ended up, me and him leaving stage together. By the way, the show's going on. We leave stage together. We're screaming. He's screaming at me in the green room. I walk away, and then I think, I bet I can save this by walking through the audience and taking my shirt off again. Not a very big miscalculation. I do that.
With the burgers?
Yes. And my whole thing is that it was getting laughs. So I believe.
Yeah, you're just like, hey.
It's getting huge laughs. So I think I'm riding the laughs. I'm not looking at my friend who's literally having a fucking meltdown because I'm doing everything he's asking me not to do on his show.
Right.
Everything he's saying, please don't do. It's almost like I'm going, fuck you, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And so we have a meltdown, and then me and another comic that I was good friends with for a long time, who I thought was my friend, he starts attacking me, and I'm trying to like rebound, and I can't rebound, and then I just leave the stage, and then it was awkward, and then Doug came to my hotel room the next day, we did a podcast, we talked it out, and he said, I don't have to release that if you don't want me to, and I said, I don't care, I don't give a fuck, I go, it's who I am, it's what I did, people saw it.
Yeah.
If you want to release it, release it. And he released it behind a paywall so that it wasn't just a free-for-all on me, which was very nice of him. But we did a podcast. We're friends. We're completely friends.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, my friendship with the other comic kind of fell apart that attacked me because I felt like I knew him really well.
Is that a comic that we would all know?
Yeah,
no?
Yeah. Okay. But
Zan?
No, it's... I wish that it hadn't, but it just...
Right.
It did. And then I felt and by the way, probably wrongfully so.
Yeah.
I felt really betrayed by him.
Yeah.
Which I probably I don't deserve to feel.
Sure.
But then at a certain point, I was like, I'm not going to fucking, I don't know. I just kind of walked past it. And I was like, I don't have any problems with him now, but we haven't talked since.
Sure.
So that's where I feel bad. And I don't think he has any problems with me. I don't have any problems with him.
Right.
But we haven't spoken. And so, but that happened. And then I go to St. Louis and I sell maybe 400 tickets throughout the weekend. And going to do radio. By the way, I'm depressed because I had a fucking fallout with Doug. I do the Thursday show. I go to do Friday press and we're driving. And whoever was managing at the time, we're driving by a convenience store in St. Louis, like East St. Louis. There's a black dude out there in a pair of gym shorts, no shirt, and slippers and socks, smoking a cigarette and drinking a beer at like 8 a.m. And I just thought to myself, that guy's got a rough fucking life.
Yeah.
Like, and I said, in my head, I was like, I wonder how long he's going to last in this world.
Right.
And as I thought that, the manager goes, how long can you do this? And I went, huh? He was like, I mean, like, are you just going to be like a road comic?
Ugh.
And I was, and in my head, I was like, I never had heard that in a negative light. I'd never heard being, I looked at being a road comic as a privilege.
Sure.
Like, you're good enough to be on the road. That's a very small group of people that get to do the fucking road, that get to do comedy for a living alone, but then get to be a national headliner.
Yeah.
But the way he said it, it was so condescending. And I was like, holy fuck. I was like, oh, this guy looks at me like I'm a loser.
He's looking at you like you're looking at the guy in the flip-flops.
Yeah. And by the way, he's a manager at a comedy club.
Right. On the road.
In fucking St. Louis.
Right.
And I just was so depressed that weekend. And I thought to myself, I remember thinking, dude, it's why I got into therapy. I was like, so how does this end for me?
Right.
And, you know, and you, a part of you goes, you know, and very luckily I got into a deal, I think it's CBS for development, but those I've been in probably fucking, I'm going to over-exaggerate, but no lie, probably 12 deals. I've been in 12 deals all that have never gone anywhere. None of them. And I was in a deal at the time, but I didn't have any passion for it. I didn't like the direction of the sitcom. And in my head, that was my like Hail Mary pass, is this deal that had been lasting for like 6 months. And I didn't feel in control of anything. I remember when I first got in the business, getting my first deal and then going, when do you need me? And they're like, well, we'll give you a call. And I was like, I'm ready today. I'll work every single day. And they're like, you're fine. There's this guy, David J. Nash, who did colleges. And he's like, oh, I can't be out there then. I'm working. And I was like, how? He's so in control. I wanted to be in control of my own life. And so that's when the vlog started. And then Tom started the fat shaming, called me and told me, he goes, hey, man, I'm sorry, I'll stop this if you want. And I go, what do you mean? And he goes, this is really aggressive. Like, they're really going after you. I was like, wait, what? He was like, you aren't following this? And I was like, no. And Joe texted, he's like, this is fucking hilarious. You two going after each other? I wasn't going after Tom at all. I didn't know what was going on.
Right.
By the way, Tom at the time was 275.
Right.
Okay? And he's fat shaming me as a joke.
Right.
And it's catching on like wildfire.
Yeah.
And then Tom said, let's get into this bet. This bet. Ari started it. It was when my special for Showtime was premiering. I was in New York. We all three get on the phone. Ari starts the bet, and the bet just catches on with fans. And I start looking at it, the traction it was getting, and I was like, you know what? I could get into this. I get into this and really fuck with Tom because I know how to edit and post videos. Tom's got to hire someone to do that. I can do that quickly. So I started going, fuck this. Let's do it. And then I started up in the ante. I was like, yo, I'm doing weigh-ins. And it was like things I was doing on my vlog. I was like, weigh-ins? And I'm using Instagram to post these. At the time, Instagram story shows up. I'm like, oh, I'm fucking really into this. And it was a way to like take control of my own future. And I started posting videos. I remember Rogan going, dude, that fucking Midnight Special video is fucking awesome. And I was like, oh, thanks. And people started going, I love your videos. And then we do the weigh-ins. I post it on Instagram. I take a picture of myself and it goes viral because I have no beard on. And I was like, fuck yeah. Overnight, everything changed. I start selling tickets. And I go back to that survivor's remorse where I go, oh, no. People go, what if nothing had happened for me? Like, I had been there. I had totally been there. It's the beauty of this business is one fucking thing can change your career.
Yeah.
And it's like, and that's why... Trust me when I say, I was the guy at the store who was at the store and people would look over your shoulder when they talk to you.
Right.
I was that guy. Yeah. I was definitely that fucking guy. I was on Travel Channel. Who the fuck gave a shit about Travel Channel?
Right.
My real friends, like Burr and Rogan, pulled me aside and were like, you need to get the fuck away from that network. You need to just focus on stand-up and do your podcast.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think about that. I've thought about that a lot. I talked about it with Bobby Kelly. Bobby and I are on a cruise together. And he's like, I'm glad all that shit's going on for you. But remember, there's guys out there on the road still fucking plugging along. I was like, right. I've never forgotten that.
Yeah.
Never.
Why do you think, and this is kind of a ridiculous question, because the rule in this game is that you don't necessarily get the things you want. And the exception is the people that do. What do you think? The guys that are really talented, there's a lot of guys that are hacks or fucking whatever. They don't work hard. They're drug addicts or drunks.
Yeah.
But the people that are really talented that don't connect with people, why do you think that is? Because you've been in this business a while and you've done it. You've done the things that have connected you to people deeply where they love you. I have friends that, you know, that I went to high school with that adore you, that are more excited that I'm doing this than the specials that I've done because they love you so much. So when you look at people that don't make that connection, why do you think that is?
I'll tell you, I don't know that answer entirely, but I can tell you the only advice that I have ignored. And that was, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this. You're doing this wrong. I've ignored all those. So whenever someone told me not to do something, I just ignored it and then went with my gut. And I think a lot of people in our business listen to everyone too much. I think a lot of people go, like the machine story. You got to stop telling that story on stage. Everyone I've respected, everyone that I know, Ari told me to my face, please stop telling that story. You're done with it. You're over it. You got to retire it. You got to retire it. New material. I go, I do new material. I'll do an hour of new material. Every time I come into a venue, they will see a brand new hour. But I'm going to tell the story at the end. Because in my gut, I feel like the dude who listens to podcasts, who works a forklift or blows glass or is in dialysis, when he gets his one night to party with his friends and they go to a club, they definitely don't want to see me just working on new shit. They want to see good shit. And that's why trust me, I'm very obsessive compulsive about putting an hour together before I tour it. But at the end, they might have brought five people to see the machine story. And if I fucking let them down, that's on me. I've not told a story one time. Dave Stroop said, hey, man, I got angry customers at the bar. I was like, what? It was a three-show Saturday.
Yeah.
And I just was like, I can't tell it one more time. Yeah. He was like, well, I have a feeling you're going to be telling it at the bar.
It doesn't, because I feel like a lot of people in this business are, what you just said, the forklift, the guy on dialysis, the people that work all day, there are people in this business that are doing it for them, and then there are people in this business that are doing it for other comics.
There's people that just don't, they want to be the guy that's at the store every single night so that if Delia sees him, he respects them.
Right.
That's why they're at the store. Right. It's like they're doing everything for the wrong reason. They bought new shoes because Brendan Schaub wears new shoes all the time. But they're not being authentic to who they are.
Yeah.
They're trying to do a new hour of material every year, not releasing specials because Bill Burr does an hour. They have a podcast because Joe has a podcast.
Right.
They know there's people who are in jiu-jitsu who have no interest in jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Because Joe is passionate about jiu-jitsu.
Right.
I would.
I started yesterday. I'm kidding. But
no, but I mean, but that's the truth. Is yeah. Like, so many people look at the way things go and go, that's the path, as opposed to looking at Bill Burr and going, dude, Bill moved back to New York to get back into stand-up. Like, just, we're looking at Ari. Ari moved to New York because he wanted to challenge himself. As opposed to looking at, like, what do I want? I mean, dude, I'm speaking out of my ass. I'm not certain this is accurate. But I'm almost certain, I think Ari would say this, that Joe was like, what the fuck are you moving to New York for, dude?
Right.
You know? Like, don't do it.
Yeah.
But you have to be in command of your direction enough where you go, I respect you, but I'm not listening to you. Like, yeah. I hear what you're saying, but I know what I want. I know what I want to do. I mean, everyone told me to get off the fuck off Instagram. Everyone. And I was like, I like it. I enjoy it. I have fun doing it. It doesn't bother me. It makes me giggle. My daughters and I talk through Instagram. We text funny cat videos.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, well, I'm on the fucking app. I think there's too many people concerned with what other people think of them. And I think that is what gets in the way with a lot of great comics. It's as opposed to like being yourself, and which is technically your brand, You're trying to brand yourself. It's like, dude, I did it. I was very guilty of it. That special right there is a Dave Attell, Dane Cook ripoff. It's like me being the fun party frat guy. Fucking, hey, yeah. You know what's fun to do? You know what's fun to do? When, you know, like, you know what cops say? When you touch their, it's not me. It's not authentic to me. Dude, people told me to stop telling stories. Right. People have told me, why the fuck do you tell stories?
Right.
And you're like, oh, I don't know. I see that more in this business of people just not, like people go, oh, Sebastian's doing act outs. I'm doing act outs.
Right.
As opposed to going like, Sebastian was doing act outs when people were ridiculing him.
Yeah.
Going like, what the fuck are you doing on stage?
Do you worry now that you're very successful and you have all these fans? Yeah. Do you ever worry about like, where does the inspiration come from? Where, because you're not going to really bottom out in the way that you could have years ago. You're not gonna have those moments. Do you ever wonder like, what's the next thing going to be? Do you ever think that do you ever worry about being too comfortable?
Yeah, and too comfortable, but doing the same thing again.
Right,
like just doing more of the same thing.
Right.
There's a couple comics I saw where I saw their first hour special. I was like, this guy's fucking phenomenal. Then I saw their second hour special. I was like, it seems like a lot of the exact same jokes just repurposed.
Yeah.
And I was like, and then I see his third special. I go, so he hasn't challenged himself at all. He's doing the exact same thing. Then you look at someone like Burr, who you go like, wow, he's doing this and that special. He's doing an act out in this special. He's doing like, he really challenges himself every special to switch it up. With material, I definitely, like when it comes to straight stand-up, this is a conversation I just had with someone that Halston has heard. I had a conversation with Stanhope. Stanhope's someone who said, notoriously said, I've already done all my great jokes. What am I going to do? Do another abortion joke? Do another AIDS joke? Do another, like, he's like, I've done them. I've done all my jokes. I'm done. And then I call Stan up one day and I go, what are you doing? And he goes, oh, I'm having a grapefruit and vodka, watching the sunset, thinking of some goofs. I said, what? And he goes, oh, I'm just trying to come up with some goofs. Got a pen and paper and a cigarette. Trying to write knock-knock jokes, you know, like, ever think we could write knock-knock jokes, right? Yeah. And I was like, I don't know. And he goes, well, I mean, those guys weren't funnier than we are. Like, clearly we should be able to write great knock-knock jokes. And I went, dude, it changed my fucking brain. And then I went, yeah. Like, literally, I spent a week going, I bet I can write great knock-knock jokes.
Yeah, we
jokes.
Could write
I was like, why am I not writing knock-knock? Like, just out of curiosity.
Right. Yeah.
I understand that there's no career in that.
Right.
But why? What if I did a special and I ended on three original knock-knock jokes?
Right.
Instead of like Amy doing street jokes at the end of her special,
right.
What if she had written original street jokes? Original.
Right. Sure.
What if she came up with Donkey Punch?
Right.
What if she came up with the Angry Pirate? All the stuff.
Right.
And so I was like, yeah, that's fucking brilliant. At the same time, I was getting obsessed with Norm MacDonald. And I said, I became obsessed. I want to write a guy walks into a bar joke. I want to write that. I got to be able to do it. I'm a talented comedian. I got to be able to write a guy walks into a bar joke. So I started like paying attention to it. And then on April 13th, I walked into a Starbucks and I found my guy walks into a bar joke. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, this is the funnest I've ever had in this business.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, let's really challenge ourselves. Like, I've told the machine story. That's great. I can tell fun, quick stories. I can tell longer stories. I can tell stories about my family. I'm not going to lose that. But I want to challenge myself in the disciplines of comedy and go like, and so that is where my brain got fucking stuck. Like,
yeah.
And then when you start doing theater shows, you go, I really am not moving around a lot and I'm not using my body the way I could. I remember hearing Jerry Seinfeld going, if you can jump to sell a joke and get a bigger laugh, why not jump?
Yeah, do it.
And I was like, I could really add in. I'm not a physical comic, although, dude, I started as a physical comic. Like I was I would be sweating by the end of my show.
All over the stage.
And then I got into this place where I just stood and told stories. I was like, I should really expand my disciplines. And so I've been working on that. And then yesterday, in therapy, I thought to myself, you know, I haven't really done anything outside of stand-up that's really inspired me creatively. And so yesterday I went, I think I'm ready to do this thing, this idea that we had been kicking around. And I was like, I'm ready to work on my set and then put it on ice for a month and then shoot something different that I'm in control of, that I'm writing, maybe not directing, but like it's me. And I was like, yeah. And then the other thing is, you know, it's like with podcasting, I now my challenge is I get excited about all the create, like
the gadgets.
The gadgets.
How to make it better, like, how to get different angles, how to
And then I got Something's Burning, which is my cooking show.
It's a great show.
It's a funny fucking show.
Yeah.
It's so much fucking fun.
Yeah.
And so right now I go, just keep the train moving.
Yeah.
Just keep the train creatively moving forward, and like I don't think I need to find another bottom. I think I'll be good.
Yeah, because you can't. That's drug addict shit to keep finding the bottom.
I think you need to find a bottom if you're on the wrong path.
Right.
If you're on the wrong path and
like every now and then, I don't know if I would say it's a bottom, but I do things where it's like I did the half hour, no one saw it. I did the Netflix. The response is good, but it's, you know, it's in a sea of shit. The podcast is steadily building.
Dude, that's every single one of us.
Yeah.
You know what? Can I tell you something?
I'm not selling the tickets I'd want. Certain markets are better than others. It's like, you know, little by little, then you do a bigger podcast. You do this. You get in the pilot thing that goes nowhere.
Yeah.
Or it's wherever. We're in it a year and a half now. A manager calls me. They're like, we're going to try to I'm like, good. Let me know.
But
let me know when I have to show up and work.
Your strength, or where I see your success happening, where I see it popping, is that you are so authentically you and 100% across the board. And I tweeted this the other day. I was like, everyone, get ready for the tsunami of great New York comics that is coming our way.
Yeah.
Because you guys have all done so many podcasts that weren't like top of the charts. Like Legion of Skanks is a fucking amazing podcast.
Yeah.
But they're not, I mean, I'm not being, not shitting, but like,
no,
they're
not,
it's not Rogan or Marin.
Of course.
And you've learned how to do podcasts and stand up. It's like I said, you've been building houses. You've been building houses out of fucking
That no one's seen.
Mud huts in a village. And then and now they're like, hey man, can you build us a house? And you're like, oh yeah, I definitely got that. So when I saw you on Rogan, I was like, of course he's fucking phenomenal right now. Cause like, I got you on, I've seen people do, not, I mean, obviously I'm a huge fan of Rogan's podcast.
Right.
And I've seen people on where you go, oh, I don't think they understand what this show is.
Right.
And it's not the best fit. Or maybe I see people and I go, is that guy's doing his act? And you're like, oh. Yeah. And I saw you on and you were so conversationally hilarious. And and then it's like, I said to myself, oh, I forgot. He's been legit doing podcasts for the last 9 years. Like going in on Bobby Kelly's and having to go toe-to-toe with motherfuckers and defend your point and know your point and not fuck around. Bobby's podcast is one of the best podcasts
His
out
podcast,
there.
His podcast, Bread, Legion of Skanks, Tuesdays with Stories, Bread, a lot of these.
Dude, Bobby's podcast is ground zero for New York podcasting.
Yes.
It spawned everything.
Right.
And his podcast is a legit podcast. I went on it with Lisa.
I was on it with you years ago.
Yeah.
Years ago, yeah.
Lisa Traeger goes on and you watch them spar and go back and forth and you go, oh, that's the brilliance of New York comedy. It's very in your face. It's very, very like fun argumentative, very fun breaking the balls.
Right.
And then I think a lot of people forget Joe Rogan is not an LA comic.
Right.
He's a Boston comic.
Yeah.
Like he's may have grown up out here, but all his roots are in the East Coast.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so when you two were on, dude, I was so excited to watch you crush it, but I was like, this is a great fucking podcast.
No, it was great. I'm glad it went as well as it did. And it's one of those situations where you're like, oh, thank God I had done all those different podcasts and had all those different experiences so that I could be funny on this platform.
Yeah, it's that same scenario we're talking about.
Yeah.
It's like, I remember I did Montreal 1 year, and I don't know what I did, but it was some like really, really shit position. It's my whole career has been that.
Yeah.
It's been like no one really wants me, but my manager gets me in, and everyone thinks I'm too old for it, and no one really pays attention. Oh, I know this guy. And they kind of walk out of the room, and I was backstage, and Tom was back there, and so was Jimmy Parr.
Yeah, Jimmy Carr.
Jimmy
British
Carr.
British guy.
Yeah.
Great, yeah.
And it was a bunch of very young New York, LA comics, none of which I knew. I didn't know any of them. They were all maybe 4 years tops, maybe 10 years tops. I've been doing it at the time about 16 years, 17, 15 years. And all you had to do was 10 minutes. And I was like, oh, I already know my material. I'm going to do this, this, and this, and I'll be done. And everyone was nervous, and I said to Tom, I go, am I missing something? Is this like really important? He's like, no, they're not prepared for the moment. You're prepared for it. Like, you're not nervous because you know what you're going to say.
Right.
They're still wondering if what they're saying is funny because they're just all kids that got a break. You're an adult who's doing his job.
Yeah.
And I went out and I fucking destroyed. And I got off stage and I was like, oh, yeah, I was ready for this opportunity.
Yeah.
It's so much, life is so much easier. I wanted to win Last Comic Standing 13 years ago, 14 years ago, more than anything in the world. 14 years ago, I got on Last Comic Standing, Last Comic Standing 2, and it broke my heart, and I thought my career was over when I didn't go into the finals. I didn't go to the house. They all went to the house. I didn't go to the house.
What year was that?
2004.
Okay, wow.
2004.
And that's when it was a huge show. Number
13 million people.
Yeah.
20 million people. I mean, it was like, dude, to put in perspective, 13 million people
watching.
That's
what Rogan is now. Oh, like, yeah, in terms of numbers, yeah. You know? Yeah. It's wild, yeah.
And by the way, I'd even argue
Rogan's bigger.
I would argue it is a dot. They had a 13 million people net scanned around the world.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Rogan's got a dialed in 13 million.
Yeah, of course. Highly engaged.
Who are also showing that to another 13. Like,
yeah, it's crazy.
It's a really intense 13 million. Yeah. But fucking, I was heartbroken. I remember I have this little duck that I got Georgia, because Georgia wasn't born yet. Lamb was pregnant. And I got kicked off. And we were down. I remember Bonnie McFarlane and Gary Goldman. And by the way, not shitting on them. These are all my friends. Bonnie McFarlane, Gary Goldman, and Todd Glass were going to get lunch. And I asked if I could go. And they were like, oh, we don't know where we're going to go. And they didn't want to go to lunch with a loser because they didn't want to not celebrate their victories. And understandably, but man, it hurt. It hurt so bad.
That's tough.
And they weren't being assholes, and I don't resent them. I'm not saying anything bad at all. I love those people.
Yeah.
I love those people. But I remember the look in their eyes going like, oh, we wanted to talk about the good things going on.
Yeah.
And we can't do it in front of you. And they were like, oh, we don't know where we're going. And I was like, okay. And I just kind of hung out, and I was like, fuck. And I went over, there's a gift shop in whatever this hotel we were at. And Barry Katz was there, and he had these papers for me to sign. I was, one of my bits was going to be on Shorties Watching Shorties. And he was like,
that's a nice consolation prize.
Yeah. Yeah. And and I was signing the contracts, and Barry's like, Papa, don't get so down on yourself. I mean, for Christ's sake, you're having a kid. And I was like, that doesn't help.
Right.
I was like, I'm a fucking loser. Like, ugh. And I remember going, yeah, I'm having a kid. And I grabbed this little duck at the whatchamacallit, and I go, hey, for my kid. Like,
yeah.
Like, dude, had I won Last Comic Standing, I did not have the material to back it up.
Right.
I had 20 minutes. I had 20 fucking minutes.
Yeah.
I would have been like every other person you never heard of since that did Last Comic Standing.
Yeah.
Not Gary and John Heffron and Josh Blue and Amy and Doug and all these great people that did Last Comic Standing who were ready for the moment.
Yeah.
I would have been like the one where you're like, whatever happened?
That fan.
Dude, I know what happened to him. I follow him on Instagram.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what happened to him, but.
Dude,
was he working at SeaWorld?
I think he teaches comedy.
Oh, okay.
It's pretty hilarious.
Yeah.
I don't think his intent is for it to be as funny as it is.
Sure.
But it's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Watch that fan teach comedy and
whew. Yeah.
But yeah, he teaches that. There was another guy who had cancer. I forget his name. But like I was like, I wish I had that guy's career. And then
yeah.
Oh, thank God.
How important it is, you have Leanne, you have the kids. That's gotta be a stabilizing factor in your life that a lot of people don't have. So a lot of guys out there on the road do not have a wife, they don't have kids. It's like that to me seems like a big part of having a life that's not simply comedy.
It is. I think sadly, sometimes you can get so wrapped up in comedy you ignore the things in front of you.
A big realtor in New York, there's this realtor, Dolly Lenz. She sold over like $9 billion in her 20-year career. And they said to her once, they said, can you ever turn it off? And she goes, no. And she goes, for my kids and my husband, it's probably tough. But she goes, I can't turn it off because this is just who I am. It's like how I operate. So she's like, I'm kind of, I love my kids, I love my husband, but I'm that shark at dinner That's that shark when I'm fucking running 10 miles in Central Park or selling a $50 million condo. Do you kind of identify with that where it's like you really, you know, yeah.
So much.
Yeah.
I'm that guy at dinner.
Yeah.
I'm that guy. I mean, if something funny is happening, I'll pull out my camera, throw it on Instagram. Or if it's different funny, I'll just write it. And then all of a sudden, I was just having lunch with my wife and my two cousins, and we're talking, and I was in my phone writing jokes. I wrote, my daughter Isla got on my lap the other night, and we're talking, we're bullshitting. Isla's not very affectionate, and then in the middle she goes, "Hey, Dad, what's a boner?" And I'm like, "Oh my God, what an inappropriate time to ask me." We were talking about what we didn't like about our bodies, right? We're having a conversation.
Sure.
We're having a conversation about what we don't like about our bodies. And I said a joke that I've been fumbling around with about it looks like I outgrew my dick, that when I get naked, it looks like I'm still wearing a belt.
Yeah.
And Leanne said something about my pubis. And I said, my pubis looks like a single shooter on a grassy knoll. And then I wrote that down. I then said to Leanne,
single shooter.
Leanne won't remember who I'm talking about when I say, like,
right.
If I go, if I say a name to someone, she'll go, "I have to do a podcast with Tim." And then she'll go, I don't know who the fuck you're talking about. I go, "Gay guy, doesn't look gay." "Oh, yeah, I know Tim."
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So, boom. Redhead looks like he's an angry cop. And she's like, "Oh, yeah, Bill Burr."
I like how you treat her like a Hollywood executive. Yeah. "Gay guy doesn't look gay, you know, gruff voice." "Oh, yeah, I know.
I know you're talking about Tim."
Good move. Green light it.
But the one I said to her, I was telling a story about my buddy Pete, who bought our car that we have and then painted it white to sell it in his dealership or whatever his car thing.
I was so nervous, by the way, during Rogue, and I'm like, I don't think he knows I'm gay. And if he asked me about my wife, I'm just going to say she's great.
I had no idea.
Oh,
I guarantee you did.
If he was like, you know, and you got a wife, right? I was going to be like, in front of 20 million people, Bert, I was going to go, absolutely, she's great. Real Boston lady, runs her mouth.
Dude, the thing about Joe is that he, I guarantee you, he knew, but he just does not. He really does.
Of course.
He genuinely does not give a fuck.
Of course.
Like, it's not that.
Oh, we're talking about aliens.
He's not that guy.
He's into shit that's beyond that, yeah.
But I said to my wife, I said it in the thing, and then immediately, conversation's over, I write it in my phone,
as
I said, "Hey, you know Pete, remember Pete, Cowboy's buddy Pete?" She goes, "No." I go, "Pete, guy lost his virginity to the Monster Mash." She goes, "Oh, I know Pete." He lost his virginity to the Monster Mash. It makes me laugh so hard.
Are they ever like, "Dad, put the phone away, enough's enough"?
I think
yeah, we're good, we're almost.
What's up?
Sorry, Leanne.
That's okay.
We apologize.
We're supposed to be
okay.
We're bouncing
fine.
In 1 minute.
We're coming in.
Sorry.
No. Real quick question. How often do I turn it off and not be in my head about comedy or about Instagram or podcasting or this art form? How often do I turn it off?
2%.
That's an honest
answer. Now, what's that like to live with someone who never turns it off?
Well, 2% is actually an exaggeration. That was for humor.
Right.
Okay.
By the way.
That's a good number.
Reality, you probably turn it off about, it depends. When the kids get home, you kind of turn it off. But you have a hard time putting the phone down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
But if I can get you to put the phone down, then you stay pretty present. How hard is it?
We just talked about this in my therapy the other day. Like, sober October.
Yeah.
I am not here. I'm here. Right. I'm here. I'm not drinking. But man, I am not here.
You're in the phone.
I'm in the competition.
I'm in the fucking game.
I'm looking at everyone's numbers.
Right.
I'm texting with those guys. I'm talking shit.
Yeah.
I am not present.
Now, October's not fun.
Yeah.
Christina just reached out to me to see if she and I could podcast weekly during Sober October because apparently it's not great fun for her.
I think Joe's wife's like, "Well, we just lost Joe."
Yeah. I know. See you on November 1st.
Ari's chick hates it. Like, everyone fucking hates it, but we love it.
Yeah, and it's just sober and weight training. Like, well, that's working out.
It's whatever it was. It was
hot yoga 1 year.
Hot yoga was the 1 year, and that was fun as fuck.
Like 15 days out of 31, you had to do hot yoga.
Crazy.
And this last one was a workout challenge that we wore heart rate monitors for, and it was... Dude, there was gameplay. It was it was shit talking. There were people going fucking mental on it. Like Joe flipped a switch and then was like, smile and goes, "It's nice I can go back to here." And you're like, "Who the fuck am I talking to, Colonel Kurtz?"
That's crazy. Yeah. That's wild. I've been sober 7 years. Maybe October I'll get fucked up. I'll just do 1 month.
Yeah. Reverse.
A year of just fucked up October. Yeah, right. Every day. But listen, thank you for coming on. You're the man.
Dude, I
appreciate
dude,
this.
I absolutely fucking love you. Anytime you're out here, I want you on my podcast.
I appreciate you.
Even
best.
If you're like, even if you're like, I'll be honest, and I'm being dead serious.
Yeah.
If you're like, you know, I'm fucking, I feel like I'm not, I'm feeling like I'm stagnant.
Yeah.
Dude, call me, book a trip on Miles out here. I'll put you on my podcast.
I appreciate it.
Reach out to Tommy. I've never done Tommy's
yet.
I'm
going to reach out to Tommy.
Dude,
yeah,
you
got to
do Tom's.
I would love to.
You
got
to do Tom's.
Absolutely would love to.
Tom.
Yeah.
There is a whole avenue of your life that is in all time I have ever talked about is what our lives would be like if we were gay.
Yeah, interesting.
That's all we've ever talked about. All we've ever talked about is how much fun we'd have if we were gay.
Well, you're living in LA. There's roosters walking around. Very similar.
Roosters walking around.
Those are chickens.
Not hugely different, I gotta be honest. But yeah, I will absolutely, man. I appreciate it. And thank you, Leanne, for letting us party.
Yeah, of course.